This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning to you from our studios in Huntley, Illinois this morning. It's the Saturday morning show. After a very busy week of activity, the trip to the Illinois State Fair, a lot of action there with the Salute to Agriculture Day on Tuesday, and the sale of the Grand Champions on Tuesday afternoon. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we have some very special upcoming events we want to talk about. We want to talk markets this morning and talk about helping young people beyond bidding for their Grand Champion livestock at the Illinois State Fair. And, of course, Jim Fazell joins us on Saturday morning for you weekend gardeners. Jim always has some good ideas and tips, and we're going to get right to work on that and join Jim Fazell when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. For Jim Fazell to join us here on the Saturday morning show, and I like your opening line, the last full week of summer?
Well, meteorological summer, we have to qualify that a little bit. The solar summer goes on for another 3 weeks, but yeah, this is the last full week of meteorological summer because the fall actually starts meteorologically, isn't that a fine word?
Yes.
On September 1, we'll be done with the month of August, and this is the last full week. Then we have 3 or 4 days the next week. However, it's just amazing how fast the summer's gone. I can't believe, and I can't remember one that's gone more quickly. And it is kind of a summer to remember. You know, we started out pretty cool and wet, and everybody had trouble getting planted. I know some of the people got in the fields early, but a lot of gardens didn't get planted until quite late. But there were a lot of late flowering plants as well because it was cool. The flowering trees and flowering shrubs, the flowers lasted a long time, and even though we had a late spring frost, it didn't seem to bother them too much. The summer itself was warm, but you know, I think it averaged above normal, but not because we had any particularly hot days, but with all that cloudy weather we had, the nighttime temperatures never got down to normal. They just stayed up. It was warm at night and hot during the day. I think we had maybe a half or a dozen and a half 90-degree days, and that was it. Actually, it was a real easy year to be outdoors, real easy summer, not an awful lot of bugs. I don't remember getting more than maybe one or two mosquito bites. But it was one of the best gardening and crop seasons in decades. Just incredible how well the stuff grew. Not just field crops, but in the gardens. I know we've had stuff that the plants grew as well as they could, and we've had just a tremendous amount of stuff coming out of the garden. Some of it was a little late because it got planted late, but there we are. It's been a good year. Yet there's still weeks of good gardening to go through. We aren't done with it yet, and just because it's starting to be fall or getting near to be fall doesn't mean that we're done. But there are some things we need to think about. There are some gardening chores that need to be done because a lot of us have finished picking out some of our areas, and for some of these things, it's too late to plant anything else, or pretty well too late unless you want to go with lettuce or something like that. But what do you do with all this stuff, the spent plants from the garden and the grass clippings and the leaves that are yet to come? Well, we need to compost them. We need to take advantage of all this organic material. One of the ways to do that in your vegetable garden or your flower garden, dig these plants right back into the spots where they grew. Chop them up. Turn them in, and that is an advantage if you've kept track of where the stuff is, because then you'll know that last year you had tomatoes there. This year you don't want to put solanation crops in there if you're going to do some rotation, but you do also need to map your garden out so you know what's where. Another way that you can do that is to dig a pit. Now, one of the things we do, we grow in beds in our garden, as a matter of fact. One of the things that we do practically every year is to empty a bed. We empty it out, put it in the bed next to it, or put it on a tarp or something where we can leave it open through the winter. You need to stockpile some of this soil so you can use it to cover up your roses later, put a tarp on that to cover it up so it doesn't get wet and freeze up when you need it. You leave the pit open and you fill it with all this vegetation, the leaves, the grass clippings, all of the garden plants that you've pulled out of the garden. And in the springtime, mix some soil with that, chop it up, fill that back up again, and you have a bed that is beginning to get some of the best soil you can have. And I mean to tell you, our soils can be heavy around here. The answer to that is to incorporate organic material. You can do that quite easily in your garden. Another way that you can do this, if you don't have an awful lot of stuff, is the plastic bag system, these big black garbage bags. You fill them up with grass clippings, leaves, and so forth, the old plants. You need to chop them up so they can get them in. Throw a couple of shovels full of soil in with all that plant material. Tie the bag up, put it in a place where it's not in direct sunlight, and just let it sit. Every week or two, you want to go out and turn it over, roll it, so it mixes the soil with that plant material. And if you have a place where you can let this stuff all store till spring, when you open that up in the spring, you're going to have wonderful compost, as good as you can get. Another way to do that, and a lot of us don't have room to do it, but the good old compost pile will work. Local requirements or local regulations will tell you whether you can or cannot do that, because it takes some kind of a structure. It does take space. A compost heap needs to be at least a yard by a yard. That's 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, because you need a minimum size to generate enough heat for the decomposition and the sterilization that you're going to have from it to take place. And the way you handle it, of course, is you throw in a layer of chopped up organic material, you throw a layer of topsoil on it, and you keep adding the organic matter, maybe 6 inches of it, and topsoil, a couple 3 inches of it, till you get all the way up to the top. Now, one of the problems with this is that if you have a compost pile that way, you do need to turn it. That means you've got to use a garden fork or something like that. You open up one side of this container or this space that you're holding them in, and you turn the stuff over. And that's the answer to getting good compost and to keep the rodents and the fragrance away. If you have stuff that's decomposing anaerobically, that means it doesn't have enough air, it will get fragrant. And the fragrance is not good. A good compost does not smell, and if it does smell, it smells good and fresh. So you want to be sure that you can do that. Composting drums will work. Those are available in the garden centers. You can get them. They work very similarly to the plastic bag system, but they make life easy for you. The best mix that you can put in them, by the way, is half grass, half dry leaves, or just, again, mix a shovel full of soil with about a third of the bushel of plant material. Now, the composting drums work because they have a crank on the end of them, and you can turn them. You turn them a quarter of a turn every week or a half a turn. Some of them sit up on a stand. Some of them just lie on the ground, and you can just roll them around half a turn at a time. And you want to make sure that you do take advantage of as much of this yard waste, garden waste, as you can. Disposal and yard waste is a last resort. You can do that, and almost every community has a way of picking that stuff up. It is recycled and made compost, but then you have to go back and get it. And the idea is to not waste any of this organic material that you've grown in your garden. It's a precious commodity, and it's one improvement that you can add to your garden, your soil, without any worry. It's not going to hurt a thing.
And you don't have to pay for it.
You don't pay for it. A little bag work.
Yeah. Phone call from a listener who said you talked about repairing lawns this time of the year, but he wanted to know when he should start planting flower bulbs for next spring.
Well, you can plant them as soon as you get them at the store. Actually, I think some of the stores already have them, the garden centers. As soon as they're available in the garden centers, you can plant them out. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks, planting. But you can do it as soon as they're available. They will start to grow. Some people worry that if they grow and they get leaves above ground and winter comes along, that's going to ruin them. It's not going to hurt them. Those leaves may even turn brown because of desiccation. But as soon as spring gets here, those bulbs are going to continue to grow, and you will get your flowers perfectly, even though the leaves don't make it through the winter.
Okay, my friend. Have a good week.
You too. Thanks, Orion.
Jim Fizell, our specialist in horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 20 minutes after 5 here on this Saturday morning on WGN Radio Chicago with the Saturday Morning Show. Coming to the end of a very good week. We just had a great time this week, and the opportunity to go back to the Illinois State Fair on Salute to Agriculture Day And to watch these young people, and they seem to be getting younger all the time. There was a Grand Champion exhibitor that was 9 years old going through the auction ring with her animal. And it's just a lot of fun to watch these kids celebrate what I've often called their Super Bowl season. They've worked a year with these animals and done their best to bring them along and show them in the ring. As I've said many times, you think there's drama on the stage in a theater, there is greater drama in the show ring at the Illinois and other state fairs. So we had a good time at the fair, but as Jim Fazell said, where has this summer gone? Because there's a very big event coming up in a few days, and well, Max Armstrong, how about that?
Orion, it's hard to believe. It's week after next. Yeah, just a little more than 10 days away. The Farm Progress Show at Boone, Iowa. Don Torti is Vice President and Market Leader at Penton Agriculture at their offices in suburban St. Charles. First, Don, how many of these shows have you attended over the years?
Well, this will be number 21 on staff, and then, of course, several before that. I still remember as a small child, the first one in Grand Junction, Iowa, just kind of sticks out as a memory in my mind.
People have a wealth of memories about this show. They met people there. They remember equipment being debuted there. It really is remarkable. When you talk to somebody, they'll say, oh, yeah, I was at that show at Washington, Iowa, or I was at the one at Malta, Illinois. It does make memories. Sometimes back in the day, they were related to very muddy fields and parking lots you couldn't get out of. You changed that to a great extent with permanent sites, didn't you?
Exactly. When you were saying that, Max, that's exactly what went into my head. I think there some of those memories are not good, but I'll tell you what, having permanent sites like we have in Decatur and in Boone, people are going to love coming to Boone. You know, you have great roads getting in. You have the permanent parking lot, the parking lots that have been a parking lot for several years. And inside you have permanent restrooms and many, many amenities you did not have when you went into a cornfield.
You know, we're talking about this like the permanent sites haven't been in effect very long. I think that just attests to the longevity of the show itself. Actually, you've had permanent sites for more than a decade.
Yeah, we have. And you're right. It does seem, sometimes it feels like it's just new. But, you know, the key is to continue to make them as good as they can be. But I'll tell you what, when you go to a show that's not on a permanent site, it makes you appreciate what we have all the more.
I remember going to some of those shows back in the mid to late 70s, and all of the discussion was about iron, how big that tractor can be, how big the tillage tool can be out there. And the discussion has shifted. It's very much technology-oriented. Even though there's still a lot of heavy equipment, there's a lot of tech talk.
That's exactly right. I mean, when I think of Farm Progress Show today, I think of technology. And that can be in steel. It can be steel technology. But oftentimes, it's technology in the cab. It's technology in the seed. It's technology in crop protection. You know, it's that drone. It's a data product. There are so many technological advances today. And the Farm Progress Show is where many are unveiled and certainly, you know, not only unveiled, but, you know, you could see all kinds of things coming, you know, not only what's here today, but what might be coming.
Just to digress just a little bit, as we're talking about technology, you have a special technology conference coming up right after Thanksgiving out in Iowa this year. That's all it's going to be about, right? Technology.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. It's called the Ag Data Conference, and if anyone wants to look at that, you can go to theagdataconference.com. But that's exactly right. What's the latest technology dealing with data? Who owns the data? What do you do with the data? You know, data is one of those things that can keep people up at night if you think about it, and we're going to try unraveling that from many sides, not only from the company side, but from the farmer side. And we feel being a big publisher out here and our editors talking to growers and talking to companies what they're doing, we can truly be right in the middle and help facilitate that talk.
I'm excited about this. I am actually moderating a panel at the fall conference of the National Agri Marketing Association coming up next month, and the topic is data and technology. And then I think I'm going to be there opening day for your big event at Coralville, Iowa, is where the technology show is. Is that correct?
That's correct, and right at the end of November, so it should be November 29th and 30th at the Marriott Coralville Marriott, right there in Iowa City. Easy access, right off of 80.
The website again for that is
theagdataconference.com.
This has been a year, a growing season with big crops. And, of course, big crops tend to depress prices. We've seen markets that farmers are shaking their heads about, although there's been kind of an amazing performance in the wake of the August crop report. But when you find an ag economy that is not as robust as it was 4, 5, 6 years ago, does it hurt attendance at the shows, Don?
It doesn't. A couple things that are happening right now. The commodity markets may not be as robust, but certainly the crops look fantastic. I was just visiting with someone today who drove up, to Minneapolis and drove through central Iowa looking at all the crops and how green they still are, how good they look. I think there's a lot of promise out there for an outstanding harvest. But just as importantly, regardless of commodity prices, this is where you can go. Maybe not you're going to buy a new combine, but this is where you're going to buy that new technology that we talked about that may be more important in a time of down commodity prices than it is when things are terrific. So, no, fortunately, it really does not affect it. And, crops are really coming along well. Things seem to be shaping up for a terrific crowd.
You know, I was reminded the other day of the international attendance at this show. For one thing, I was thinking about it watching the Olympics from South America, because a number of South American farmers will attend this show every year, Brazil and Argentina. But I received a message on Facebook about 10 days ago from a farmer in Queensland, Australia, whose farm I visited about 3 winters ago. And Mr. Black said, I'll be seeing you in Boone. And I was reminded of how people come from around the world for this show.
We get over 50 countries coming to this. It's an international buyers program. So even, we work with the federal government to help not only promote that, but more importantly, when these growers are there, to help line up some of the exhibitors with people from different countries so they can work on, exporting their goods. We can help them communicate to see what they want. And truly, it's one of the biggest international shows for agriculture in the United States and continues to grow. And we're not shy about that. I mean, while it is, certainly a national show here in the United States with people coming from almost every single state, we think the globalization of ag and the importance of having, not only a lot of exhibitors from other countries, but also having visitors from other countries really makes for a terrific experience.
Thinking back through the years, as we are wont to do, remembering prior Farm Progress shows, I remember election years when presidential candidates came to the show. Have you had any indication that either of the candidates might try to make it this year?
We have not, but oftentimes those things come at the last minute. For us, they're a lot of work. When President Bush was at the Farm Progress Show in Ullman, Iowa, it really changes some of the dynamics. But we're also going, hey, to have the leader of the free world, that really says a lot about the Farm Progress Show. But the two candidates this year, we have not heard anything from either camp.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you there. Both Orion and I will be on stage at ADM all 3 days of the show, and I'll be at Case IH at 10 o'clock, 10 to 11 every day. So we'll look forward to seeing you around there, and we invite a lot of other folks to come join us, too, at the Farm Progress Show at Boone, Iowa.
Max and I are really looking forward to it. It's a time of the year that we get to say hello to a lot of you who are regular listeners here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. So again, I've always said they have the most comfortable chairs of any exhibit at the Farm Progress Show, and that's the ADM tent. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, from 11:30 until 1 o'clock, our band Backpage will be there. On Tuesday, Lieutenant Governor from, I think, about 7 or 8 states will be joining us. And then on Wednesday, about the same number of state directors of agriculture from around the country coming to the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. Again, it starts a week from Tuesday. Indeed we are, and I'm going to do something agricultural today. I'm going to the Arlington Park Racetrack to watch horses, because we had horses on the farm, so it's an agricultural event for me. I guess they were a little different on the farm than they are on the racetrack, but it sounds like kind of a muddy day for racing with that kind of a forecast. We're back with the Saturday Morning Show here on WGN Radio, and I'm going to do something toward the end of the show that I failed to do last week when I talked about a great restaurant out in the middle of corn and soybean fields. Several of you said you didn't give us the name of the restaurant.
And I guess I got so excited about what was happening there, I may not have given you, but I will before the show is over this morning. But right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson this morning talking about a mind that can be a dangerous thing. But if you're tired of your clothing being ruined by a spill or a stain, we have help for you from the folks at Wink Products Company. Thanks to Wink Wash Away Laundry Stain Remover. This easy and safe to use pre-wash stain remover is a must-have in the laundry room for all washable color-fast fabrics, including wool, cotton, synthetics, even cashmere. And for those unexpected stains when you're on the go, eating in your car, watch them vanish with Wink Instant Spot Remover. Check them out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now, Samuelson Says. I don't know if it's my advancing age or what, but my mind is beginning to come up with strange thoughts, some that may be dangerous. And that dangerous mind worked overtime following a phone conversation I had a few days ago with a lady in Chicago who raked me over the coals for my support over the years of GMOs, genetically modified organisms. Because of that, I would probably cause the death of her children, and then she would sue me because of my support. Well, when I get that kind of a call, my first question always is, what is a GMO? What is a genetically modified organism? And I got the usual pause and silence, and finally she said, well, I don't know the scientific description, but I know they are dangerous. Well, we went on to have a brief conversation. I told her that banning technology like GMOs would deny food to millions of people on the planet, and that GMOs enabled us to grow crops and produce more without using the pesticides, the chemicals, and the other crop protection products that we used before GMOs. That didn't even make a dent. But after I hung up, I got to thinking, because I have yet to see a death certificate that says died from consuming GMOs. But I have seen the latest report on traffic deaths in 2015. In the United States, 35,200 people died in traffic accidents. So should we ban automobiles because of that number? Or should we ban swimming pools because of the number of people, and children particularly, who drown in swimming pools? Should we ban just about anything we do because it can be dangerous if we're not smart enough to do it properly? As I said, my mind is beginning to think strange things. Oh, maybe we should ban airplanes too, because airplanes crash and kill people. But again, I come back to the point I made. I have yet to see a death certificate saying the person died of a GMO. Come on, friends, let's feed the world with technology. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock. And Max Armstrong joins us to talk markets with Jerry Gahlke of the Gahlke Group in Chicago when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Jerry Gahlke, Gahlke Group in the studio with us here. A huge corn crop, huge soybean crop, but the market still handles it in stride. Someone out on the farm might be saying, well, the traders obviously don't believe the USDA either.
Well, they probably don't. A lot of us don't. We think maybe that if you look at their methodology and how they did that, they counted cobs and they assumed some things, that all these things are going to be good ear weights and all that. So it's about all anybody can do. And if you think about it, we do that. I do that when I went in the field early when it's all, oh, boy, if it just pollinates, I'm home free. Well, they do the same thing, and then they're going to look again. And then we'll see what we find. And I'm finding some things that are problems. But I think the underlying thing, big crop, but big demand, world demand. We have done nothing to curb demand by too high a prices. So This is we're using a lot of protein, a lot of starch, a lot of corn, and that's the good news is that one year we're not going to grow a record crop, and we'll see these $5 corn, $6 corn again because we've got such horrendous demand in there that we're just about using up everything that everybody can produce, even these third world countries, you know, Ukraine and Russia. We have a surplus, but compared to our usage, it's not all bad. Agriculture is not in bad shape. We just grew a little bit too much this year.
Everybody talks about the Chinese soybean demand, but I noticed a story this week about India's soy oil demand based on the fact that they're going to be importing less palm oil.
Could be. I know that they have, we all remember when they were starving, you know, and all of a sudden they became a soybean exporter because they realized what technology and what producing things can do for them. But I asked the same question about India to actually a gentleman from COFCO. I had dinner the other night with him. And also from Smithfield, and that's the other area we don't give a lot of credit to, in their demand potential that's coming. It's just not all about China; it's all about these other countries. And so I watch China, of course, and everybody on TV does, you know, CNBC or Bloomberg or whatever. But we need to watch these other countries. Are they eating more, and are they getting better and increasing their diet? And when that happens, you want to lift, you know, this demand needs to lift all ships, not just China. So one day we'll have more than just China, just like now we had to deal with more than one U.S. producing soybeans, like at Brazil. You know, what's going to happen when all these beans come on? And now we're using both crops. So I think there's still a lot of demand out there that's waiting for prosperity to help it get bigger, and India is one of them.
But you are comfortable with the numbers that the USDA has adjusted to here. For the time being, you're comfortable with the demand numbers that they've posted.
Yeah, I think my theory is, and I have nothing to prove it, is that they saw this demand finally coming better than they thought. And you can blame benefiting from the thing is in South America we saw with the corn and the beans there. The assumption for years was we're going to keep producing record crops in South America, and it didn't happen. So when you consider the United States, we'll know more this year to see whether it's 175 in corn or 48 in beans or whether it's really more realistic, like 168 perhaps and 46 in beans. Because we grow beans and corn just about in every state, beans for sure. South America grows beans from top to bottom. So can we continually expect with La Nina now coming on, eventually, it's finally going to come, will we not affect one of the Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina, Brazil? Are they all going to continue to have record crops? And China doesn't seem to ever have a hiccup, but it's been hot there. So we seems like we've been awful lucky in the last 4 or 5 years to everybody being able to produce enough and not have to maybe buy as much. But total demand still looks good, you know, worldwide.
I guess the bear in me says, you know, Brazil and Argentina is going to plant wall to wall down there this fall. You know, they have the ability, the amazing ability to still produce big crops. And you can't count on the Argentine crop getting a devastating flood every year. No. What if they have huge production next year on top of still remarkably big crops in the United States this year?
Yeah, and I think we're already seeing some of that expectations. If you look at next November soybeans in 2017, it's lower. There's an inverse in it. It's like, I need your beans now, but I may not need them later. We've been going through that for 3 or 4 years. And corn, Argentina will probably produce more corn, and Brazil will too. I think the latest thing, and you have Dr. Cordillera on once in a while, you know, listen to what he says, because I think it's looking like South America is only going to increase about 2.5% next year in beans, maybe 3. The exporters and people out there think that we're increasing global demand for protein and equivalents, soybean meal and whatever, used to be about 5% compounded, or about 3.5% now. So we may just be able to keep up with the global demand. And when you think about it, compound interest rates, you know, we haven't been able to use it for a long time because they're zero, but compounding something is a pretty big deal. 3.5% of a big number is a big number, and can we match that incremental increase that we need each year to do that? And you look back in your long-term situation, we are now using more than we produced 5 years ago and everything. You know, so it's the slope is higher. It's just that it goes up in like a sawtooth wave. You know, we have good days and bad days. Like Orion once said, his dad told him, and I remember it well when I was listening to him early in my life, he said, if things are good, they're probably going to get bad, and if they're bad, they're probably going to get good. And if you don't understand that and you're a farmer, then you're going to learn real quick.
Jerry, it's always good to visit with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry Gulkey, Gulkey Group.
It is 10 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio Chicago. This was my 53rd year at the Illinois State Fair. And a big part of the fun of going to the fair is seeing people I see about once a year. Some oftener than that, but thanks to all of you who came up to say hello following our salute to agriculture families in the morning and then the sale of the grand champions at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And among those people, David Lehman with the CME Group in Chicago. And he was in the barn where the champion livestock was being housed. And, well, he was pretty excited about being at the state fair.
We're here with 4-H to promote our game, Commodity Carnival. It's an educational game for kids 7 to 14 years old where they really learn about the business of agriculture.
And you started this how long ago?
This is our, I believe, fourth year of Commodity Carnival. We have reached 200,000 kids in total have played the games at the fairs that we go to. So we go to state and county fairs throughout the Midwest. And kids love it. They compete for prizes, and they learn a little bit about agriculture.
What is the basic lesson you're trying to teach? How to trade commodities or risk management?
No, Orion, it's really that farming and ranching involves risk. And so they grow a hog and then market a hog in the current version of the game, put a little corn, a little feed, and a little egg, and then some input, some health and labor and those other inputs, and then it drops through a random game board called a Piglinko board and lands on a price. And depending on the weight that they put into this egg and the price that it lands on, they find out if they made money or not. And so they find out, as that hog goes through that Piglinko board, there's uncertainty in agriculture and risk, and that hopefully they'll then think about maybe how to manage that risk as they get a little older.
Certainly a graphic way of demonstrating it. How many fairs will you take it to this year?
We'll be at 120 fairs this year. 4-H will be at 120. I won't be at that many, but we'll combine state fairs throughout the Midwest and then a lot of county fairs as well.
Well, in the decades I've been covering markets, it's been fun to see the education of risk management and how to use it in your farming operation. It has grown a great deal, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has, Orion. I've been in this business with CME and Board of Trade for 27 years, and we have constantly focused on educating about how to use risk management tools, the importance, starting with option pilot program back in the 90s, and it just continues. So I think farmers are really, and ranchers, becoming a lot better at managing risk.
Well, when I came to Chicago, it was the butter and egg market. It has certainly changed, and one of the additions among the many is live cattle futures, feeder cattle futures. A good friend of mine, Andy Anderson, was involved in the initial work on that. But over the last year or so, I've talked to a few cattlemen not terribly happy. What's CME Group doing?
We just announced some changes a little over a week ago, Orion, on August 5th. We're going to be increasing the quality specifications in the contract, changing the choice select percentages. Higher quality slaughter steer and heifer are being fed now and being marketed, so our contract needed to be updated to reflect that change in the underlying market. We're also putting a discount at one of the delivery points that's in the northern territories in Worthing, South Dakota. They tend to have a greater supply of beef in the fall months. It's a seasonal discount for October only. So in the fall, they have a greater supply than there is packing capacity to handle them. So there's a freight cost to get those animals to available capacity. And that reflects or results in a discounted cash price in the region. So again, a change to make the contract more reflective of the underlying market. Volatility has been the big kind of concern that a lot of the industry have had, both the producers, feeders, as well as the packers. And so we're looking at ways we can perhaps reduce volatility. We are looking at some kind of circuit breaker mechanisms. We haven't reached a decision on those yet. We really think a lot of the driver for the volatility is the cash market has changed. cattle are now contracted directly between the feeder and the packer through formula pricing and grid pricing. There's not as much negotiated transaction for the futures contract to really look to and know where the market is. So we're working with NCBA. They have a working group that we're working very closely with and the broader industry to see what we can do to make that contract a better hedging tool for them.
I saw the percentage of cattle marketed the old traditional way. Not very high, is it?
No, it's not. It's down to 20%. And that's really, we have live delivery on our contract now. We have 13 delivery points at stockyards from Texas all the way up to South Dakota. And very few slaughter cattle go through those auctions in the cash market. They go direct through these formula pricing arrangements from the feeder to the packer. So we're going to really work hard with the industry to see how we might change the contract to make it a better tool for them.
A case of CME listening to their customers.
That's right. We really depend on those customers to give us feedback on how we're doing, obviously. In all of our contracts, we do these reviews of the contract terms routinely in our contracts, and we really do that by listening to the customers, putting a small focus group together, typically to work through the issues, and then going out with a broader survey to the marketplace.
And let's close by going back to young people and the Illinois State Fair and other state fairs. What else are you going to be doing here, honoring people in the younger age?
Yeah, this is a really exciting thing we get to do. We're going to be giving $50,000 in scholarships, $5,000 scholarships to 10 award-winning 4-H'ers here at the fair. And this, I love that part of it. You know, these kids work hard. They know that agriculture is a business when they're raising these animals and the things they have to deal with. And so this is just a little way we can help them further their education, go on, and hopefully maybe become customers of the CME someday.
Indeed, they probably will if they continue in the chancy world of agriculture with weather and markets and government and all of the other challenges that we have in putting food on dinner tables and clothing on our back and roofs over our head and now energy in the tank. David Lehman with CME Group in Chicago joining us at the Illinois State Fair. We're at 3 minutes before 6 o'clock news time, and I do want to get back to something because last week I'm always fascinated by the things that develop in rural America. And last week talked about a vineyard and a restaurant near Elburn, Illinois, located in Maple Park, as a matter of fact. And you reminded me by emails and phone calls, you were so excited talking about the restaurant, you didn't tell us the name of it, and we'd like to go. So here is the name of the restaurant. Well, it's more than a restaurant. It is the Aqua Viva Vineyard, Winery, and Restaurant, located on Highway 38, about 3 miles west of Highway 47, and that's near Elburn. It's actually in the town of Maple Park, if you want to put it into your GPS with the address there. But yes, another example of a family turning farmland into grapes, turning grapes into wine, and putting it together with some very great food. As a matter of fact, there was, again this year, an excellent wine display at the Illinois State Fair, and we did have the opportunity to stop in and visit with many of the vineyards from around the state. Heavy concentration of vineyards down in the extreme southern Illinois, but there are quite a few around northern Illinois, too. It's another agricultural commodity. But the Aqua Viva Vineyards, Winery, and Restaurant. I just say it's about 3 miles west of Elburn, Illinois. But thank you for reminding me that I did not do that last week, and so now we have taken care of that. State fairs ending on Sunday. The Wisconsin State Fair, the Illinois State Fair. Well, the Wisconsin State Fair is over, but the Iowa State Fair, the Illinois State Fair, all coming to a close on Sunday of this week. But then, as you heard, there are still state fairs around the country and also the outdoor farm equipment shows with the granddaddy of them all, the Farm Progress Show, leading off the parade the end of this month, and then Husker Harvest Days, Ohio Farm Science Review, Sun Belt Expo, all of those events that take place this time of year. And right about
harvest time. Yesterday, the Department of Agriculture issued the monthly cattle on feed report showing the number of cattle and calves that are in feedlots, and those numbers up slightly, up about 2%. Marketing during the month of July was down about 1%. Dennis Smith at Archer Financial Services said numbers came in a little higher than expected, but probably won't have much of an impact on prices on Monday. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day, a great weekend at the Air and the Water Show and at Arlington and all of the fairs, county and state. And thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.